I woke up and the first thing in my mind was, today's the day. I wasn't sad. I wasn't upset. And because I wasn't upset and crying, I thought for sure this was the day that I had to commit suicide.
Hi, I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories in the outdoors. The person you just heard is Colleen Torbiak, and the day she's talking about is November 25th, 2015. That was the day Colleen hiked into a trail system near Atikokan, Ontario, with a backpack full of, let's just say, things a person might use if they wanted to end their life. Colleen came out of the woods 3 days later, fighting to survive. What happened to her is extraordinary, and it sheds some light on what it means to want to die. It also helps us understand what ignites the will to live in a person who's convinced they want to end their life. Heather Kitching brings us Colleen's story. And we should also warn you that this story contains some disturbing details, so it might not be the best episode to listen to with small children.
Colleen Torbiak has wanted to die almost as long as she's been alive. Ever since she was a kid, she's woken up morning after morning, feeling nothing but an oppressive emptiness. Interacting with her friends and loved ones felt like some kind of performance. The real Colleen moved around in her own little bubble, looking out at the world as if she were staring up from under the surface of a pool.
I hated myself, I hated my life, I hated everything about it.
Life wasn't gentle to Colleen growing up. She spent her middle school years in and out of foster homes. Some were nice, some not so nice. She ran away from all of them. She started cutting, slicing into her own skin with sharp blades. Colleen's dad worked two jobs and was never home. Her mom was a drug addict with serious mental health issues of her own.
She had tried to commit suicide multiple times when I was younger. I have memories of my mother being taken out in the ambulance from when I had girlfriends overnight. I remember the cops coming to the door after my mom's gone missing and saying that they found her. She jumped off a bridge.
So it's pretty understandable that Colleen would struggle. The problem was she never told anyone what she was going through. She was certain that nobody wanted to hear about what was bothering her, and even if they did, she figured they wouldn't know how to fix it. So, starting when she was just a little kid, she pasted on a smile and resolved to deal with the situation herself, definitively.
It was grade 8 was the first time I attempted suicide, and then from there on in, it's been the same thing.
Yeah, grade 8. That is when Colleen first tried to kill herself. She didn't end up going through with it, but since then, she's made multiple attempts. As you can probably surmise from the fact that I interviewed Colleen, none of those suicide attempts were successful, for various different reasons. And I should say that her life did get better, like, objectively better. She got married, lived a pretty stable life for 12 years. Even when the marriage ended and she started drinking and partying too much, she had the presence of mind to realize she had to stop. So she moved to Northern Ontario, got married again, built some really good friendships. But she was still drinking to keep her negative feelings at bay, so she could keep playing the role of the happy-go-lucky extrovert. And of course, that didn't fix things. By the time they'd been married for just 4 or 5 months, Colleen and her new husband weren't getting along so well. They were fighting a lot. And to make matters worse, Colleen had just learned that she couldn't have children. She started thinking maybe she was ruining her husband's life,
I thought I was a horrible person. I thought that my husband would be way better off without me. I thought his family would be better off without me, my family, my friends. I thought that I was bringing them down.
In November of 2015, Colleen decided yet again to end her life. She didn't really have a plan. She just packed a backpack with pretty well anything a person might use to die, and figured if one method didn't work, something else would. She started walking out to a recreation area an hour out of town. It's a freezing cold morning in November. If you've ever been to Northern Ontario, which is where she lived, you know that the winters come early there, and they can be brutally harsh. But Colleen wasn't fazed by the weather. There was no doubt in her mind that this was the right thing to do.
I was almost happy. I just thought this has to be the right decision because I'm not feeling nothing.
Do you feel a sense of peace?
Yes. Yes.
So Colleen gets to the Charleston Recreation Area and starts hiking into a trail. So far, so good. Everything's going according to plan. But then she sits down on a rock to rest. And she starts noticing all these little creatures around her. Birds, chipmunks, you name it. And as she watches them, her resolve starts to soften.
I'm not feeling so empty anymore. I'm watching this little mouse and it's making me giggle and it's making me smile and the sun's shining and the birds are chirping. And I thought Mother Nature was trying to tell me, things are good, Colleen. Like, I mean, if these animals are out here and they're making you smile, that's a very small thing to make you smile.
So Colleen starts thinking of heading home. Now pause for a minute. This is not a story about how a couple of chipmunks can cure you of the urge to kill yourself. That is not really how things work. Because obviously, this kind of thing has happened to Colleen before. This isn't the first time she's planned to end her life only to change her mind. I mean, she's been suicidal most of her life, but she's 39 years old, and she's still here. The way she describes it, she'd go through a rough patch maybe every couple years, think about dying a lot, maybe even attempt it. But something or someone would intervene. Then, eventually, she'd start feeling better. And she'd be fine for a while. And then she wouldn't be fine anymore. And the whole cycle would start over, with more depression and more suicidal thoughts. Colleen figures that is exactly what would have happened this time, too, if she just walked back out of the forest and gone home. But that is not how this story ends. Colleen doesn't know it yet, but what happens next will change her world completely. This time, she won't just feel better for a few fleeting months. This time, her whole outlook on life will be turned on its head. It will change how she deals with depression. It will change how she goes about solving her problems. It will change her whole perspective on death. And it all starts with a baby moose.
So I was sitting on the rock, and this baby moose calf comes walking out of the bush and almost can reach out and touch his nose. It was the most amazing thing I ever seen in my life. The big black eyes, the brown nose, the ears twitching, the tail moving, it breathing, the black eyes just looking at you and little eyelashes, and it was amazing.
Colleen feels herself relating to this baby animal, soldiering on without a mother. Because after all, Colleen's mom wasn't exactly there for her either. And yet, here she is, soldiering on. She felt like this moose understood her somehow.
I found this moose was trying to direct me in what to do. I mean, he would take a couple steps and he'd turn his head and look at me and kind of like do the swap with the head and move it to try to say, come this way, come this way. So that's when I started following that beautiful animal. And that's the last thing I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing I remember is waking up, and I'm sitting on a huge tree that's been taken down by a beaver. And I remember waking up thinking, where am I? It's dark. It's cold. I'm frozen. I have no shoes on. I have no jacket on. My sweater is frozen to my arms up to my elbow. The pants are stuck to me right up to my knees, and my socks are right stuck to me. They're frozen solid.
So if you're feeling confused by all of this, imagine how confused Colleen must be. She walked into the forest in the morning, but now it's dark out. What's going on with that? And why are her shoes missing? How did she get wet? Why does she have a big bump on her head? It's like she's woken up in some strange nightmare. Only, it's not a dream.
I tried to get up to move, and it was like my feet were asleep. I was screaming for help, but nobody heard anything. It was windy, and I was frozen. I had no idea where I was, no idea how I got there, couldn't see anything.
Colleen was scared, like really scared.
I was starting to think that maybe I was supposed to really die out there, screaming. You feel so alone. I bawled and bawled and bawled, and I screamed for hours, and there was no sounds, no lights, no nothing at all. It was scary. Very, very scary. I'm more scared than I've ever been in my whole entire life.
Let's pause here for a moment. Colleen walked into the forest this morning wanting to die. Now, suddenly, she is terrified of dying. It doesn't really make any sense. Eventually, her eyes adjust to the dark, and she's able to make out her surroundings. She sees water. She looks around some more.
I seen my jacket and my boots, so of course I put my jacket on.
But even with her jacket on, she's still freezing. After all, the temperatures are dangerously cold, around 0 degrees Fahrenheit. And remember, she's somehow gotten all wet.
And that's how I stayed the first night, minus 17, no jacket, no toque, no shoes.
Yes, you heard that right. She spent all night that way, outdoors, in wet clothes, with temperatures well below freezing, and nothing for shelter. When the sun came up, she finally got a good look at where she was. Somehow, she had ended up at the bottom of a cliff, next to what appeared to be a big lake. She still isn't sure how she got there, but she's basically trapped. The walls behind her are steep, with only the occasional tree jutting out. And on the other side is just water. It would not be an easy climb out, even for a person with fully functioning limbs. And remember, Colleen's legs are frozen. She can barely move them. She spends another night camped in the freezing cold, taking refuge under a cedar tree. It's the only thing shielding her from the bone-chilling wind. During those 2 days, her mind went into overdrive.
You can't lay here. Okay, you need to get up. I need to try to make a fire. I need to try to get warm. I need to do something about my legs. Day one, I tried to get out. I couldn't get out. I'm dragging myself because my legs are now frozen up to my knees. I would spend a good hour collecting wood off the ground because I can't stand. By the time I'd get the fire started, it would just start going, and then it would go out. I didn't want to drink the water. I think I'm beaver fever or something. So I found an old glass bottle and I'd put it in the water, but I'd go below the surface and not off the bottom, kind of get the middle water. But I also knew that it's not good to drink it because the water is so cold. So now I'm making my insides cold. I would get to the point of not being able to breathe. I would be coughing, I'd be shaking. I know that my organs were not doing so good because of me being out of breath. I'm talking to this little leaf down here that's got legs and a head, and you know, he's my new little friend, and what am I doing? I'm talking to a leaf.
If you know anything about hypothermia, you know what's going on here. Colleen is confused. She's hallucinating. That means her core body temperature is dropping, and she's in serious danger of freezing to death. But here's an interesting thing. Colleen still has that backpack, the one with all the stuff in it, the stuff she could use to end her life right now if she wants to. On Friday, that was exactly what she wanted. But now, she is fighting to live with everything she's got.
It's amazing how much I missed my family at this point and my friends. It's amazing how on the Friday I wanted to commit suicide, and by the Sunday, I'm frozen from my hips down, and all I want to do is live, and I want to see my family, and I want to hug and kiss my husband, and I want to see my dog, and I want to go back to work, and it just, I didn't think it was ever going to happen.
By morning, it sinks in for real. She knows she's going to die if she doesn't get out today. So despite how foreboding the cliffs look, she decides to try one more time to get up them. She's desperate to get back to safety.
I tried to pull myself up the hill, but every time I got up about 6 feet or 7 feet up this hill, I'd be out of breath. I was spitting up blood. I couldn't breathe. I was coughing. No matter how hard I tried, I could not get up that hill. I didn't have any avail, nothing from my hips down. So I would grab a tree and I'd pull myself up. And then I'd sit there for a bit to get my breath. And then I would grab another tree and I'd pull myself up to it. And then I'd slip back down again. And then I'd try it over again. And I kept falling back down and then just going back underneath my little cedar tree again.
At this point, Colleen has pretty much given up.
I knew there was no way I could get out. I couldn't start a fire.
She also didn't feel cold or sick anymore. And she was smart enough to know that is not a good sign.
I just knew that that was it. I was dying that day. I was just going to lay down underneath my little cedar tree, and I was going to go to sleep, and I would probably never wake up again. And not in my hands and in Mother Nature's hands at that point. So that's when I'm laying there and I'm hearing voices and I think I'm hallucinating. And I'm listening a little more and more voices and still thinking I'm hallucinating. And I sit up and I got my eyes open and I'm looking around. I don't see anybody, but then I hear more voices. I can't remember what they were saying. They were talking to each other or whatever. And then finally I just said, "Do I hear voices?" I will never forget me saying that. And they were like, "Hey, ho, Colleen." And they came running over and they're like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Well, not really, but I'm alive."
It turns out Colleen is not hallucinating. A rescue team has found her on the banks of an old open pit mine that's now flooded with water and looks like a lake. They'd followed her footsteps, which seemed to follow the footsteps of a small moose, a baby moose. But then eventually, the human footprints ended, and the baby moose's footprints carried on alone. It looked as though she'd slipped and fallen down the cliff. It's a wonder she woke up at all. Paramedics put Colleen in an ambulance and take her to the Atikokan Hospital. And remember how Colleen thought she never wanted to see her friends or her husband again? Well,
when they opened the door, all four of them kind of walked up to the back so they could see me and I could see them. And they were crying, and Mark was crying, and I started crying, and it was just the most joyous moment in the world. And, you know, he's hugging me and he's kissing me and He's so happy that they found me, and I'm so happy to be found, and I can't even describe the feeling.
Support for Out There comes from Fjällräven, making the outdoors accessible for everyone. Fjällräven makes durable, environmentally friendly gear for outdoor enthusiasts. The company's North American CEO, Nathan Dopp, says the company got started because the founder, who is this Swedish guy named Aki, loved being outdoors but wasn't satisfied with the gear that was available back in the 1950s. So he started making his own stuff.
They're really, you know, founded on necessity. You know, how can I stay out longer? You know, what will protect me better from the weather? How can I carry more weight into the backcountry?
Fjällräven's products range from clothing to backpacks to tents and sleeping bags. You might have seen their popular Kanken backpacks around. Anyway, all of their gear is designed to let you enjoy nature without worrying about your equipment or about its impact on the environment. For more information, visit fjällräven.us. And if you're not entirely sure how to spell Fjällräven, we've got a link on our website. Just head to outthereshow.com. And now, back to the story.
Colleen, miraculously, has no broken bones, but she's frostbitten from the hips down. She has frostbite on her hands, her arms, her face, her back, her head, and her urine is black. The doctor has put her on a helicopter to Thunder Bay, the closest major city. The medical team there soaks her in warm water to cause the frostbite to blister. Then they remove the blisters and start the process again. But it turns out there is only so much they can do. Around 2 weeks later, the doctor tells Colleen her legs are beyond help.
As soon as he unwrapped them, you could smell the gangrene already happening. It's a smell I'll never, ever forget of decaying flesh. It's horrible. It was bad. He took a big pin and he put it through one side of my ankle and had it come out the other side of my ankle, and I never felt a thing. There was no blood. There was nothing. They were like translucent, like you could see the frozen veins. It was disgusting.
Colleen remembers her doctor crying as he told her that he needed to amputate both legs below the knees.
And all I did was just kind of, I curled over into a little ball on my bed and cried. But at the same time, I said, I'm alive. Let's do it. I gotta do what I gotta do to be able to live.
Colleen didn't just lose her legs in this ordeal. She also lives with post-traumatic stress disorder. She has flashbacks during the day and nightmares at night. Her husband says she screams for help in her sleep. You might think all of this would be enough to make a depressed person even more depressed, especially someone who has spent her whole life thinking that she wanted to die. But something happened out there on the edge of Kalen Mine that Colleen struggles to explain.
I think almost being dead will give you the will to live. I think anybody who is suicidal, if they actually just, if they got a gun in their hand, before you pull that trigger, stop and think for 10 minutes. And I bet you anybody, they change their mind.
But you tried to actually kill yourself before. I mean, you weren't just thinking about it. Like, as far as you knew, you'd gone through with it and somebody else or something else intervened to stop you. There was no igniting the will to live at that point. Like, you know, what is it that changed for you that now you can live with PTSD and you can, you know, be missing the bottoms of your legs and nothing that happens to you makes you want to die anymore?
Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe because I knew I was dying, that I was trying to fight to live, and because it wasn't my decision anymore.
When you talk with suicidal people, they will say a lot that they feel they have no control over their lives anymore.
That's Julie Kathleen Campbell, She's a psychologist and the executive director of the Canadian Association for Suicide Prevention. I spoke to her in a restaurant near Ottawa. She says this thing about not getting to choose death, there's actually something to that. That's because killing yourself is a form of taking control.
Sometimes people feel that's the only control they have, having control over their death.
She says feeling like you're in control of something, even if that something is death, is really, really important to people. And that could have been a major factor in what turned Colleen's life around.
So maybe just she felt for so long she had control over their death, and then that day she felt she didn't even have that control. The only control she had at that point was to survive, which was completely the other way around.
In other words, once Mother Nature intervened, once Colleen didn't have control over whether or not she was going to die, death suddenly seemed a lot less appealing. And living took on a whole new luster. So I had to wonder, is this a thing? Do other suicidal people have brushes with death and then decide they don't want to die anymore? Campbell says it's hard to know for sure, because this isn't exactly something you can study. I mean, no ethical review board is going to let a group of researchers scare people into thinking they're going to die just so they can see if it stops them from wanting to. But she says, even without official data, she is pretty sure it happens. She says she personally has seen people start to kill themselves and then change their mind while they're dying. They'll actually call her up as they're trying to go through with it.
Well, we've seen a lot of situation in the short term where people attempt suicide and as they're dying realize that they were trying to kill the pain and not end their lives, and then they reach out for help. I don't follow those people on the long term, so did that cure them about suicidal thoughts? I wouldn't know. But it certainly changed their way of looking at the situation.
In case you're wondering, those people who call Campbell while they're dying, she says most of the time, it's not too late to save them. Colleen has done a lot to heal her own pain since the day she was rescued. She quit drinking, she takes antidepressants and sees a counselor, and she says she talks about her feelings to her husband and her friends now, instead of keeping it all inside. Colleen can't say for sure whether she'd still plunge into depression if she wasn't doing those things. She's not about to go back to her old lifestyle and give it a try. What's certain, though, is that Colleen never would have taken the steps to get help if she hadn't been terrified into action by her brush with death. It's been nearly 2 years now since Colleen lost her legs, and she says her life is completely different now.
I'm happy. I'm in love with my husband. I have a great relationship with my friends. I have a great relationship with my father, with my sister. I'm back canoeing, kayaking, I go four-wheeling, I go swimming, I swim at the pool at home. I can do everything and anything that I put my mind to. I have to change the way I do things, but it can all be done. I'm happy to wake up and be alive every morning. I've learned that you gotta take things a lot slower. But every morning I wake up, the first thing we do is I give my husband a kiss, and we say we love each other, and we're happy, both of us are happy to be here, so.
If you're one of those people who has spent years or even decades thinking you want to die, chances are good you actually don't. Please don't do what Colleen did. Don't wait until you're already dying to come to that realization. There are so many other ways to take control of your life. The number for the National Suicide Prevention Hotline in the U.S. is 800-273-8255. You could even call Julie Kathleen. She's the expert we heard from earlier in the story at the Canadian Association for Suicide Prevention. And if you're calling her from outside Canada, don't worry. She won't hang up on you. That story was reported and produced by Heather Kitching. She's a reporter based in Thunder Bay, Canada. And I should say, Heather has actually been on the show before. If you liked this story, check out the other piece she did for Out There. It's a first-person account of what happens when the place you love doesn't accept you for who you are. Here's a little taste of that story.
One morning, when I was around 14 years old, I woke up from a passionate dream in which I made love to a woman. And I thought, shit. Because until that moment, I had managed to persuade myself that the feelings I had long suspected were lesbian in nature were really just platonic affections. And sooner or later, I too would understand why girls I went to school with thought that guys were so cute. Now I had to admit I had a problem.
That story is called Exiled from Ranch Country, and if you haven't already listened, definitely check it out. I have a favor to ask of you. Well, two favors actually, but one of them comes with a perk. The first favor is to subscribe to Out There. Maybe you just listen occasionally. Maybe you just discovered the show. Or maybe you download each episode manually. I would love it if you would consider subscribing to Out There. That way, you won't miss any episodes, they'll come right to you when they're released, and you'll be helping us. The more subscribers we get, the better our rankings will be on platforms like iTunes. Now for the other favor. This one comes with an offer. We've got a beautiful Hydro Flask tumbler to give away, and we'll enter you into the drawing for it if you leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Just email us a screenshot of the review so we know it was you who left it, and we'll put your name in the hat. If you've already left a review, thank you so much, and don't worry, there will be more giveaways that you can take part in down the road. Oh, and I should say, if you're trying to leave a review on the Apple Podcast app on your iPhone, it's a little complicated. You can't do it straight from the show's page as it shows up in your feed. Instead, you have to search for Out There, and then it will give you an option to leave a review. It's weird, I know. It's a lot easier on a computer, but of course you're probably not listening on your computer. Anyway, it's doable on your phone, just not super intuitive. Hint, hint, Apple. A big thank you to Amy Zimmerman, Jean Dind, Christy Yoho, Kim Albee, and Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial contributions to Out There. Listeners are our most reliable source of income for the show, and we are constantly humbled by the support you give us. If you'd like to make a donation, please consider contributing to our Patreon campaign. We're raising money to produce Out There more frequently. Just head over to our website, outthereshow.com, and click support. And while you're there, you can also take a look at all the Out There swag we've got for sale. We just added a few new items, so go ahead and check it out. That's it for this episode. Music for today's story included work by Kevin MacLeod. Head over to our website for more details on that. Our theme music was written by Jared Arnold, and our marketing and business development director is Alex Egerking. Have a beautiful day. Be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.